This podcast is brought to you by Squarespace. Whether you need a landing page, a beautiful gallery, a professional blog, or an online store, it's all included with your Squarespace website. Creating your website with Squarespace is simple. Start your free trial today at squarespace.com and enter offer code Guardian to get 10% off your first purchase.
One, two, three, four.
Take up all the lies.
Move over.
Make the noise of size.
Spill over.
Hey, I'm Jessica Valenti, Guardian columnist, and this is What Would a Feminist Do? Remember a time before November 8th? A woman was a major political party nominee, pussy was grabbing back, and love was going to trump hate. Feminism was everywhere. We were on the offensive. And we were looking forward to never, ever seeing Donald Trump's face again. But a short time later, and here we are. We have a president-elect who's been accused by numerous women of sexual assault. A man so racist that the KKK and white supremacists are celebrating his win, especially since he's putting some of them in his cabinet. There's so much to say about all of this, and we're really just going to barely scratch the surface. But what I noticed in the immediate aftermath of the election was the toll that this was taking on so many people I know. Women are scared. And almost 2 months after the election, it's still taking an emotional and psychological toll on a lot of us.
This is Bonnie in Montana. I'm worried about not Trump himself, but the unleashing of a pent-up hatred of women in general.
Hey, my name's Janine. I'm a teacher in New York City, and the thing I'm scared about most for the Trump presidency is what is going to happen to education.
Hi, this is Ryan from Boston. My biggest fear of a Trump presidency is his unwillingness to acknowledge and address climate change.
Yes, this is Kathy from Cincinnati, and I am not concerned about a Trump presidency, but I have dread. In terms of social regulation, he's back to the 18th century. His views on domestic and international problems are all from the 1980s at best, and he's out of touch with everything except ego and money, and this does not bode well for anyone in the United States or elsewhere on the planet. Bye now.
Has feminism lost the optimism we had before November 8th? Are we entering a phase of the movement where that forward progression is going to be replaced by a defensive crouch? So usually at the top of the show, I do a short rant about something. But since I suspect there are going to be plenty of things to rant about as the new administration takes office, I just wanted to do something a little bit different. I've heard from a lot of you over the last few weeks about how scared you are, how disappointed you are, and quite a few of you have asked my advice on how to move forward. I wish that I had some words of wisdom that would make everything better, but I really don't. I am also scared. I'm also disappointed. I'm waking up every day with my stomach in knots. But I do want to say that that's okay. In fact, I think, you know, the only thing that we can do right now is actually embrace that feeling of discomfort, because it does remind us that something is very seriously, horribly wrong. We shouldn't feel good, right? Like, we shouldn't feel comfortable. Right now, comfort to me feels sort of too close a cousin to acquiescence. And when I say that, I don't mean that you can't take a break or a breath. We absolutely do need to take care of ourselves, especially if we're going to have the energy to take on the next 4 years. But I think instead of beating ourselves up for feeling miserable or wallowing in that misery, you know, we need to use it. We need to remember that this is a perfectly normal reaction to a really terrible situation. So, you know, when we wake up with that knot in our stomach, let's try to turn it into fire in our bellies, I guess. And, you know, don't forget, we don't need to be sure of what to do right now. We just need to do something. And to help me get into this a little bit, I'm joined by Sarita McFadden, a Guardian U.S. contributing opinion writer, Jacqueline Friedman, activist, author, and host of her own really great podcast, Unscrewed, and Amy Thorne-Thompson, who is a longtime reproductive health rights and justice advocate who works for Advocates for Youth. Thank you so much, everyone, for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah. Thanks for having us.
So, Sarita, since you're sitting right across from me, let's let's start with you. How are you feeling? What are you thinking about these days? You had said to me, we rode the elevator up to the studio together, and you had said to me that you had been preparing yourself for the worst.
Yeah.
I mean, so you were not super taken aback.
No, I wasn't. I mean, I think that's the product of being like Black in America, yeah, and a child of like, you know, seven generations, a child of sharecroppers and, you know, knowing the long, long arc of history for this country and like what it means to be a Black woman in this country. So I think my instinct was, I want to believe that my countrymen and women would actually bend towards a kind of equitable, sustainable justice that, you know, a vision of a country that does the least harm, mm-hmm, and provides the most opportunity across all identities and class. That was my hope. And I wanted to believe that that was something that was real and possible. But I also know my countrymen really, really well. And I think Tressie McMillan Cottom.
I was just thinking about her.
Said
know your white people.
Yeah. And it's true. And like, she's raised in the South and I'm raised by Southerners in the North. And definitely knowing what Northern racism is, you know, and knowing what recognizing what Southern racism is, I just felt like, I know my whites and I'm like, I know I can't trust them. I'm like, I'm a hope for the best.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure if they're actually going to execute the best to actually think beyond themselves and beyond their own comfort. And then they proved me right.
Right. Right. Jacqueline and Amy, how are you all feeling? Were you surprised? Are you settling into some sort of uncomfortable acceptance?
I was more surprised than I should have been.
Yeah.
And I think it's not because I underestimated the power of white supremacy and misogyny and Islamophobia and xenophobia. I think I just wanted to believe that maybe there were enough of us who would show up to fight against that. So I did hold out hope until the end, but on election night, I was with my community and I was on Twitter.
Yeah.
Just for like, and a common friend, I think, of many of ours, Jamil Smith, was tweeting, and he tweeted this one thing that like summed it up for me and then sort of like actually was my turning point. He wrote something to the effect of, I knew my country hated me. I didn't know it hated me this much.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that for me was like, right. Oh, yeah. And honestly, since then, I've just been planning, right?
Yeah.
And
mm-hmm.
strategizing and checking in on my folks to see how they're doing and trying to figure out what they need. Really spending a lot of time with folks of color, especially our young activists of color and LGBTQ youth that we work with at Advocates to really identify what is it they need and what is it they want to do. Because you know what, young people showed up and did right by those of us who fight for health rights and justice. And communities of color showed up, right, to really move this country forward in a progressive way. And so, you know, whatever happens next is going to land on those communities hardest,
mm-hmm.
you know, along with our Muslim siblings and our trans siblings and our undocumented siblings. So, you know, it's not that I didn't have some hard moments, but I think Jamil's tweet just gave me the kick I needed to just start shifting and to be like, okay, I've still got work to do. My work hasn't stopped.
Yeah, I mean, I've been in this weird state of suspended animation because, as you know, Jess, I was like on the tail end of a book deadline when the election
happened. Awesome timing.
Awesome timing. So what that meant was like immediately, as soon as possible after the election, I had to sort of shove a lot of my feelings away and like get back to work. Mm-hmm. And I literally last night turned in my book draft.
Congratulations.
So, thank you.
Yay.
So this morning I'm feeling like, okay, like I got to get my holiday shopping done, but like I also like need to start getting plotting. Because I think that the cure for the horror is the work. And for me, I'm just like chomping at the bit to do it. And I haven't really been able to make time to do much more than, you know, make phone calls when people send out blasts.
Yeah, totally. Jacqueline, let's just stick with you for a second. You know, I think that this is the first time we have a president-elect who's been accused of sexual assault by multiple women, right? So shocking. How does that sort of play into what comes next for women and the movement against, you know, violence and sexual violence? What does that say about where we are? What do you think?
I think that's been one of the things that's hard for me to absorb is, like, enough of the country was willing to be like, meh, I like him for other reasons, so I'm giving him a pass on the pussy grabbing.
Right.
And it's not just Trump. Like, there are other members of his cabinet and his close team, including Steve Bannon, who I feel like we should hiss every time someone says his name, who have been accused of violence against women. And we have an attorney general who not only is, like, such a career racist that, like, Republicans in the 80s refused to give him a judge post, but also said in public that he doesn't think grabbing a woman by the pussy without her consent constitutes sexual assault. And he is now nominated to be the nation's top law enforcement official, right?
Right.
So, it's deeper than just Trump the man. I think that it lays bare the work that was always there, right? It doesn't change the work in the sense that the things we have to do to change the culture are still the things we have to do to change the culture.
Yep. Mm.
I think that it's important to think also about where this intersects with the other folks who are made vulnerable, right? So we tend to think about sexual violence in terms of campus sexual violence because that's the thing that gets the most attention. And certainly there are real concerns that, you know, we've had a White House these past 8 years who've made really great strides in terms of forcing schools to start thinking about what accountability looks like and prevention looks like around sexual violence and what justice looks like. Look, there's a long way to go, but it's been amazing to have somebody in the White House who says, like, sexual assault is a problem and, you know, people need to be held accountable. Like, even that has felt like healing for me, honestly, in some ways. And there's no reason to think that Betsy DeVos is going to not, like, roll all that shit back on day one. She doesn't want public schools to exist, basically. She's anti-regulation, as are they all.
It almost feels like a job requirement, though.
It's like,
let me see the resume. Are they against everything that this administration stood for over the 8 years? Oh, wait,
yes.
They are? Check.
Like, are they against the inherent purpose of the department they are being nominated to lead? Yes, mm-hmm. Check.
Right.
But beyond that, like, we know that undocumented immigrants are going to be in greater vulnerability in general, but that also means they're greater vulnerability to sexual violence, right? So if you're undocumented, you know, and maybe your employer thinks that they can harass or assault you with impunity because who are you going to report it to, right? So communities that are vulnerable are also increasingly vulnerable to sexual violence. I'm also very much thinking about a trip I took maybe 5-6 years ago to Israel and Palestine to meet with women peacemakers there on all sides of the conflict. And I remember talking to some women in Haifa who ran a sexual assault hotline, who said that during the times of most active war, basically, hostilities and violence, that the calls to the hotline fall off. And their thinking about it is that it feels, whatever side of the fight you're on, it feels unpatriotic to say, oh, like, my little problem here is that my husband beats me. Like, there's a lot of pressure to say, like, everything's fine. The important thing is that whatever side I'm on, we win this fight, right? And to push that personal violence under the carpet. And we see that in movement, in all kinds of movements.
Yeah. And I, you know, it's funny. I wrote a column about this recently, like feeling nervous or not even nervous because I know it's going to happen, that feminist issues are going to become ancillary again in the progressive movement, where it's going to be like, don't worry about that. We have bigger.
It's identity
battles.
Politics.
Right. Exactly.
Fuckers.
Right.
But yeah. That's already happening.
But
that's
we've already
happening.
Seen that. We've already seen the sidelining
you know, it was within hours of the results, and we were starting to see think pieces blaming young people for not showing up enough, yeah. or people of color for not showing up enough. And we still don't have complete numbers about who voted and how, and yet the blame game started. And we were, you know, as a woman of color, I was being told that I somehow didn't do enough.
Oh, my God.
And we didn't actually get to talk about the fact that we saw a campaign season where white supremacy and misogyny and xenophobia and homophobia and Islamophobia were the currency that we were trading on, and that impacted real people's lives.
Yeah. Well, not to mention that we, A, won the popular vote, and, like, we all did turn out to vote.
Sure.
And also, like, there was real talk voter suppression and gerrymandering. Like,
exactly.
Yeah.
And black women. Black women showed up and voted. Like,
right.
You know,
mm-hmm.
as we typically do. In terms of, like, you know, there's so many, like, the identity politic canard angers me so much to the apoplexy.
Yep.
Like, I can't even, like, I'm not even going to be anywhere remotely articulate and reasonable in terms of talking about it, in a sense that every, like, it's always identity politics.
Yeah.
But it's only identity
right.
politics if I say it. It's not identity.
right.
It's only identity politics if you say it. Like women, black people, Latinos, Muslims, if any of us say, like, speak our truth, our personhood, assert our wishes, our dreams, our desires, our vision for a future, somehow that's identity politics. But if you're a white male, a
right.
cisgender white male, that's just normal. Like,
right.
we've been, like, this language battle that we've been fighting just to, like, in order to, like, try and, like, realize any kind of potential progressive movement forward is just, it's maddening. It's maddening.
Yeah. White male identity politics.
No,
even
there's
the whole campaign.
No, politics is white male. That's politics. Everybody else is identity politics.
Right.
Jessica can watch me get all agitated right now. I've got
almost the entire cabinet is white men, and that's somehow not identity
that
politics.
That is absolutely identity politics.
Yep.
That is deliberate and identity, like, a troll worthy of identity politics, if
yep.
you will. Trolling all of us. It's brilliant, and I hate them.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in a moment.
Squarespace. This Guardian podcast is supported by Squarespace. Whether the story behind your passion is out of the ordinary or simply out of this world, you should tell it in an unforgettable way. Squarespace helps you do just that, with the only websites designed to showcase what makes your passion worth pursuing. Start your free trial today at squarespace.com/guardian.
Today we're talking about post-election anxiety and how we can use some of our dwindling, maybe hopefully not, activist energy towards good. We were talking a little bit about who showed up, right? You know, one of the things that people have talked a lot about is the fact that a majority of white women voted for Trump, right? And my feeling is, obviously, that's horrible. That's terrible. But it's actually not that surprising.
No.
Right? We
no,
know
no.
that people almost always
surprising.
Vote along party lines. This is not, you know, all women have never been behind the idea of feminism or feminist ideals or racial justice ideals, you know, and this has never been a movement about, like, universal sisterhood or the idea that all women are going to fight the same fight. How do you all feel about this? Sarita's biting her tongue.
I'm struggling right now with. I've just seen a lot of white women on the left, right? I'm using left really broadly,
mm-hmm.
struggling with what this means for them, right? Like, how is this a reflection? You know, like,
mm-hmm.
and I'm seeing it play out in all kinds of spaces. And what I'm struggling with is this expectation that people of color, particularly women of color, will be like their midwives,
mm-hmm.
right? And help them
yep.
process this to get to a good end and or absolve
yeah.
them of whatever sin they think they've committed. And I'm just going to be real and say, I can't do that. And I won't do that. I just can't be there for white folks at the expense of being there for communities of color and young people and immigrant folks, right? And I don't know how to communicate that in a way that doesn't feel mean, because I still am talking about building solidarity, but not every space is a space for folks to flail and process their feelings and to expect that others will be there to provide them the emotional support they need. So that's just the tension I'm holding.
Yeah, I don't think that that's mean. I think that that's realistic because we, you know, all of us only have a certain amount of activist and emotional energy, and we need to direct it, you know, in the most strategic and best way possible. You know, just to stick with you for one more second, Amy, you know, when it comes to reproductive and sexual health care and justice, what are your sort of big concerns moving forward right now?
What I'll say is, from the conversations that I have been a part of since the election, the two main worries at the federal level for legislative and regulatory action are going to be around healthcare and immigration. We think there'll be a tax on ACA, but we also expect that there will be a tax on Title 10, which does family planning clinic funding. And what does that mean for folks who depend on those services? We're already seeing at the state level a tax on abortion care, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think we're going to continue to see the attacks at the state level on trans young people, right? So we'll see more of the bathroom type bills. But I'm also hopeful at the state level. I think at the state level, we'll be able to probably do more protection and maybe advance stuff. And we've already seen some cities and some states indicate that they will be sanctuary spaces for undocumented folks. And in defiance of what some of the political leadership has said. But I think the two things that we are watching out for most are what's going to happen to ACA and what's going to happen to undocumented communities.
Yeah.
And then all intersections with that, right?
I also want to add a resource for the, you know, the white people who are coming to you. My friend, the fantastic activist Deanna Zant, runs a website called Ask Deanna About Race, But Only If You're White. she's a white lady. And she, you know, she's like, please come to me. She does a lot of amazing anti-racist work. She's on the board of Race Forward. She really thinks about this stuff really deeply. And she's, you know, that's a piece she's taken on. It's like, you know, so send you, please feel free. Like,
that's
send
great.
Your white ladies to Deanna. Be like, I can't help you with this, but you can talk to Deanna.
Deanna is going to be inundated. Sarita, what are some next sort of steps that you're thinking about, you know, both in terms of what you're interested in, the work that you think needs to be done, but also how do we take care of ourselves, right, as we're doing that work moving forward?
I just have to echo Amy. Whiteness takes so much space. It takes up so much space. And I haven't declared it as such, but I also don't necessarily engage in making people feel better about their feelings. I've done a lot of that work for most of my life.
Yeah.
So I feel like I get to go on a break now. I'm on hiatus. I'm on sabbatical.
Little holiday, yeah.
I'm on sabbatical from helping you deconstruct your whiteness, my white friends. I love y'all, but I got to take a break. But in terms of, to go back to your question, Jessica, you know, I'm still doing a lot of processing and thinking and reading. You know, what I would say, you know, on one hand, you know, I'm trying to think about individually. I'm also a teacher. You know, and I went to bed election night, you know, like fairly, like at a respectable hour. I didn't stay up until like 4 or whatever to watch whatever was unfolding. I'm like, I got to wake up at 6 a.m. and face students at 8 a.m., many of whom are like men and women of color, young women and men of color, working class. Some documented, some undocumented, children of immigrants. And I didn't want them to see a defeated face.
Yeah.
I did not want them to see the one like another adult looking broken about what is about to transpire. So I went and gave them, you know, and I wanted them to see a put together strong face. And mostly what I found really comforting and what they seemed to find comforting is I gave them Gandhi to read. I gave them Gandhi's Nonviolent Society to think about what it means to live in a what is possible to live in an ethical society.
Yeah.
And so that's actually really more or less the question I'm thinking. If this is the dystopic future we are facing, and there's a considerable amount of work we need to do to like resist this particular future, it also means individually, what do we do? What does it mean to be ethical? What does it mean to be individually responsive and ethical and right, and protect people who are vulnerable to make right decisions? Activism is dialogue,
yeah,
among ourselves, to try and help to manifest the future that we know is possible, even if there are forces that are resisting it. We know it's possible. The end of the Obama era isn't perfect, but we did accomplish a tremendous amount of things. Mm-hmm. And while we still have to contend with a very misogynist, sexist, racist society, we still have bright spots to know that another reality is possible. And we need, like, you know, and we can't lose sight of that. By each growing day, getting closer to whatever this administration wants itself to be, because it's unclear, we can't forget who we are, and we can't forget our work. So I'm looking to build. I'm looking to ally with, folks who can imagine an ethical, sustainable future for all identities.
You almost just made me optimistic. That's the closest I've come to feeling optimistic in a while. Thank you for that. I think that we are actually almost out of time. So I want to say thank you to everyone for all of your really brilliant and important work and thoughts. And I'm sure we'll have all of you back on soon, I hope. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
Sarita McFadden, Guardian US contributing opinion writer, Jacqueline Friedman, activist, author, and host of Unscrewed, and Amy Thorne-Thompson, reproductive health rights and justice advocate who works for Advocates for Youth. That's it for this week. What Would a Feminist Do? Is produced by Maggie Freeling. Katie Enders is the supervising producer. Valerie Lipinski is the head of multimedia. Our intro song is by Rook Day. If you like this podcast, please take a minute to rate us and leave a review on iTunes. It will help get the word out to others that What Would a Feminist Do is something that they should be listening to. I really appreciate it. I'm Jessica Valenti for The Guardian. I hope you'll join me again for What Would a Feminist Do?